you know that it's going to be alright. I think it's gonna be alright. Everything will always be alright when we go shopping. Well, you know that it's going to
be. We got your shopping back, G. We got you covered here at the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show. Thank you for tuning into it this Saturday morning, July 24th. Just past a skosh past 8 o'clock. My name is Johnny Wright. I am your host with the most shopping news, customer service news. What's the latest stuff, the trends? What are we buying? What are we not buying? And how are we buying it? And how are the people who are supposed to be selling it to us doing it, selling it to us? That's what the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show and its accompanying blog, theunsecretshopper.com, are all about. Thank you for joining me this morning. If you're in town for Ragbri, listen, we welcome you to the capital city, but you got another 100 miles that way. Wherever that, yeah, to the west. Yes, of course, the Ragbriers will be starting their trek, their sore bottom trek tomorrow, and probably some of them even started. You know, there's those hoity-toity Ragbriers who have probably crossed the state like three times since I started rambling on. You know, they're the show-offs. They're the people who invested $5,000 in a bicycle and $5,900 in toilet paper to put, you know, on their fannies. Sure, and they're the show-offs. And then the rest of us kind of lumpy schleps are in the rear with the gear the whole time, and they're just running circles around it. But either way, I've never ridden on Ragbri, but I hear it's an absolute blast. And so best of luck. I understand it's supposed to be a pretty easy route this year. Easy for me because I'm not even going to be near a bike. Coming up on the radio program this morning, Andrew Clark, better known as the Brand Chef. And I just love the name. It has so many connections, connotations, double entendres. It's such a good brand. And Andrew is a good brander. He is also the interactive director for Love Scott Agency. He's going to talk with me this morning and tell you why social media works, how we got into it, how he got into it, how it helps businesses live up to the promise, and or it create the promise, actually, is the more accurate. I'm the guy who helps businesses live up to the promise of their marketing, the branding statement of the Biosphere, which is my company. Andrew helps companies create that message, and it is from the ground up. It is at the deepest recesses of the business owner's mind and soul, and it's a very intriguing process. You'll hear Andrew talk about that coming up. Also, 10 questions if you're in the job market, and a lot of you are, maybe as many now as at any point. Well, and there's the stat that says, yeah, I've quit looking. You know, I've sent in 3 applications to 3 different McDonald's over the past 6 months, and I'm not hearing back from them. I'm done. Yeah, you know, that's what they tell the people who do the phone surveys. I don't know. I'm not so sure. I think most of us, even if we have a job, may often have our eye on other potential employment if we think we can do a better job or get a better gig and get paid more for it. But anyway, coming up, 10 questions every job seeker should have an answer for during an interview. And my suspicion is you may have never heard these questions asked, or few of them, during any job interview that you've been on. They are my questions. In fact, I had an opportunity to ask them last week to many, many job candidates for a client that I'm doing recruiting for. And I'm going to share those questions with you and why they're so important and what they tell us about candidates. And if you have the answers for those questions down pat, you're going to get the gig coming up later on in the program. The Unsecret Shopper weather forecast. My corns were aching this morning. And anytime I have inflammation from the knees down, that's always a high sign of rain. And, of course, the weather forecast says nothing but sunshine today and 84. So this cloud cover we have here in the Des Moines area in the metro and central Iowa is going to bust up. We had some rain come through, and it's now moving off to the southeast. Won't bother you, won't bother Ragbriars. It's moving on. Tonight, fog after 3 o'clock in the morning, says the National Weather Service. Please set your alarms accordingly, and you can watch it really sort of show up in low of 66. Fog will still be there at 7 if you just prefer to wake up on your own Sunday morning. Then sun breaks through in 82. A really nice dry weekend. Back into the rain on Monday with about a 20% shot of showers and thunderstorms and a high then of 84. Right now, we're at 70. Secret shopping. That's what we always lead with on this here particular radio show. And by the way, next week I am on vacation, and I will be posting my five favorite blogs that I've written for the Unsecret Shopper. Yeah, it's sort of, it's very narcissistic and sort of self-digesting, but anyway, it'll be fun. Hopefully you'll read those, and also this radio program will be the best of the Unsecret Shopper radio show. It's kind of hard finding, you know, stuff for it. But anyway, we'll fill up the hour. I secret shopped Costco last week, which I do each week, not Costco, but a randomly selected business in the central Iowa area. I secret shop it, and I post the results on a Thursday post at theunsecretshopper.com. Last Thursday, that review was of Costco. Costco is a company that started in California. It was started in an airplane hangar, literally, an abandoned one. Thankfully, all the jets were out, so it was safe, back in 1976. And as I wrote in the post, I think that's kind of been the template for Costco now, as they've grown over the years, is if a building looks like it could park an airplane in it, yeah, let's go ahead and hang our shingle and start filling it with stuff. Our local Costco at 7205 Mills Civic Parkway in Des Moines is one of nearly 600 of these Costcos that have sprouted nationwide. It is a fast-growing company, highly successful. They employ nearly 150,000 people who really, one of the job requirements has to be, you have to be able to pick up 600 pounds easily, because that's about the weight of a normal item on a display rack, as I found out as I perused the store. This company generates $70 billion annually. It makes Costco the third largest retailer in the U.S. and number one membership club. Absolutely top of the chain. One of the allures for those 55 million members, if you're a member of Costco, is membership. You invest maybe $50 for a Costco card that gets you in the door that allows you to be able to buy stuff at what is supposed to be reduced prices. You're a member of a club. We buy in bulk. That resonates. We understand that. And big bulk stores and big box stores have done a very good job of branding that concept. Walmart certainly being the king, queen, and jack of that trade. But there's certainly others that have done that as well. What does that membership get you? Again, cheaper prices and a lot of stuff piled up on huge pallets in that store. And I've never been into Costco, and I was a bozo on the bus. I figured it was all groceries. That's how dumb I am. And it's cars. You can buy it like a vehicle, and you can get furniture. And they have sofas that come in very convenient six-packs. So they're wrapped in cellophane. Sure, good luck hauling it out. Yeah, but just everything. Razors that come in 10-packs. Deodorant sticks in large size, like 3-ounce deodorant, and then there's five of them in this plastic. And it must take people just hours to unbulk everything when they get it home. You know, it's too bad they weren't able to homogenize it, just add water or something. I don't know. Anyway, but the stuff is very heavy. There's a 52-ounce bag of peanut M&Ms that you can get, which has, and I was doing the math on the calorie count. It was just stunning. If you sat there, just ate them during a one football game this fall. So anyway, that's Costco's dealio dough. But for this show's intents and purposes, what I do is, do they have a customer service template that matches their huge volume of stuff? Wait, I'll get that. Excuse me just a moment. Well, I had to remember to turn that off. Live radio, that's what this is all about. Do they have a customer service template? And should there be one? Should it be able to live up to the promise of what is promised in the bulk and the stuff in the store? Should we get any level of customer service? And from my aspect, I think that there should be. There should be something. We should be greeted. We know the five pillars of great customer service that I teach in the biosphere. Smile, greet, engage, thank, follow up. Should those be present? I think they should. And so that was what I was looking for, of course, as I went into Costco. And just a few nuggets as I passed through. And you can read all of this at theunsecretshopper.com. This post was posted on Thursday. They have a greeter at Costco. In this particular instance, her name was Melis. And Melis, M-E-L-I-S, was just fantastic. Probably one of the best people I've seen in any segment of retail, from a greeting standpoint, from an engagement standpoint, from a naturally authentic, friendly standpoint. Melis really had it going on. She was strong. And I don't think Melis is long for Costco, and that's nothing against Costco. And as she pointed out, as we talked later on, Costco has a process which you can move up through the ranks, and they have a reputation for treating their employees very well, which is great to hear. And not just from Melissa's mouth, but if you go online, you'll see a lot of that. And, of course, there's the counter to that, too. Other things as I sort of wandered through the store, particularly on the first trip through in the morning, at the customer service desk, this is a tip for people who work in customer service, specifically in that kind of department. Remember, you're at a counter and you're in an area that where you are designed to help people. That there is, you're not selling products typically. You're not doing anything else other than helping people. Fair enough? Sure. So when someone approaches a customer service department counter, probably the one question that really can't be asked, or at least shouldn't be asked, is, can I help you? Because you're there for help, right? What else would you be there for? Sure, there could be other things. And nothing is really coming to mind right now, but I'm sure people have wandered in there and they weren't standing at the customer service desk because they needed help. Maybe they were just tired. They were needed something to lean on. I don't know. But in any event, a Jillian there said, can I help you? And as you know, if you've read any of these posts, that is a bad question for a couple different. It's not an optimum question. There's probably a better way to say that. It's a closed-ended question. It requires a yes or no response. And in retail, that's kind of a dead end. A question we would prefer to hear from our retail personnel is, what can I help you with? How can I help you today? Yeah, more immediate, more expansive an answer it requires. So, all right, very enough. Otherwise, Jillian was very nice and very kind and cordial. Moving on to the pharmacy, I thought I might hear something a little different. Unfortunately, Allison, the pharmacist there, said, you know, can I help you? So that was sort of, we were sort of 0-for-2 after a nice start with Melis. Perusing the store, had a nice experience with Laura, who was not an employee of Costco, but Costco hires a company called CDS. This is a cost demonstration services out of California. They are professional samplers. And I used to do some sampling myself back in ye old days. I did beverage sampling up in northwestern Iowa. And sampling can be a lot of fun. Basically, what the design for it is, of course, is you have products. You take little itty-bitty pieces of product, and you put them in little sampling things, and you stand at what is typically a movable counter, and you offer those little sampling things to people who come by and sample the thing, pretend like it's delicious, and pretend like they're going to buy some, and then move on to buy what they really came in for. Now, occasionally, some of those people do say, you know what? Yeah, the kumquats with spicy flavoring, I'm down with that. Yeah, give me a pack of those. Yeah, good. Now, how often have you purchased something from a sampler, admit it, because you felt guilty? Because for some reason in your mind, we're making this connection, you know, I really want to help this sampler out. Because they're probably going to get a little something from me buying this pack of frozen pizza rolls. They're going to get a little kick. Yeah, you know, I'll load up a couple just out of guilt. Now, maybe you took those in aisle 17 where the deodorant was. You said no one was looking. You put it back in there and you tucked it back behind the roll-on and you moved on. I don't know. I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm just saying, you know, we're human beings. Sometimes we do very, very crazy things as the Lord is watching all of this play out. So samplers at Costco. I have to tell you, I didn't get engaged very much. I would take my cart, which is steel reinforced because you have to have that at Costco. I would roll between them back and forth. I guess there were maybe 6 to 8 samplers that day, that morning, and I would drive in front of them and down the middle of them. I would come up from behind them, and I'm afraid I would scare them. And the samplers just sort of, I don't know, just sort of ignored me. It's like, hey, look, there's a secret shopper, Dolores. Ignore him. Pretend like he's not there. You know, it's like the word got out. Maybe it was a radio. They were communicating through secret headphones or something. Anyway, Laura was the first person who finally did engage me. She was very, very pleasant. They were selling yogurt, which I did try, and it was actually quite delicious. It was vanilla. And, of course, in order to buy yogurt at Costco, you have to buy 18 of them, containers. And, you know, you've really got to like your yogurt to be buying yogurt at Costco. On to the home electronics section, big screen TVs. wandered around there for about 14, 15 minutes, wasn't engaged and wasn't greeted. And there were three employees in that section who walked right around me and actually brushed shoulders with me once and didn't say anything. And, of course, that's not optimum. We would expect an engagement. Patrick in the bakery was quite pleasant, did a nice job. Nicole, who was pimping for Leaf Guard, who had, they have a display at Costco, finally sort of saw me when I walked past and engaged me and everything. And I think Costco has a challenge because it seems to me that they have people working there that aren't necessarily Costco employees. But in our consumer mind, if you're in the store and you're selling stuff, yeah, you're the company, right? I mean, you kind of represent. And so I felt like in those instances, maybe those folks could probably step up and do a little better job, a little more engaging and so forth and so on. And then there's the checkout counter at Costco. And this is the part which sort of lent itself, I think, to some real improvement opportunity there. What I watched that first trip through as I was heading up to the counter was there were two very strong, strapping young men who were at the counter who appeared to be helping people with their stuff, put it into bags, like take it out of their shopping cart and put it up on the counter. And I saw this happening, and they weren't asking if they could do it. They were just doing it. And from a distance, sort of back in the line, I thought, well, that's really nice. You know, that's kind of a nice deal they're doing there. And then as I got closer, it was sort of a weird, I want to use the word thuggery. I'm sorry. I don't know. That's not really quite appropriate. All I know is when I got there, I had this huge thing of two missile-sized containers of peanuts that were wrapped together in cellophane, and the guy just pulled it out of my hand and threw it on the cart. And I thought, well, hey, you know, maybe I want to put my own peanuts down, man. Now you got your cooties on it. I can't eat those. So I think that process maybe needs to be addressed at Costco. I think there's probably a better way to do that. It was just a little strange. Second trip into the store, pretty vacant store. And I went in an hour before close, the second trip into Costco that same day. And that also begs the question, you know, hey, listen, if you're an employee, I'm an employee, and it's 4 o'clock and I'm getting off at 5, you can bet I'm hustling around. My mind is on exiting. That's understandable. It's very human. At Costco, yeah, it was that same sort of thing. People were doing their thing and restocking stuff and were sort of missing me and sort of missing other customers, too, with opportunities to engage, and it wasn't really happening. Again, great story, though, on the second trip through. Richard was unbelievable. Like Melis in the first trip, Richard was off the hezal. Fantastic. He was back in the electronics. And he was engaging, and he shook my hand and about broke it, and it was fantastic. And he asked me my name, and he used it in the conversation. And Richard is just some schlep who's been working there 3 years. He's just a dude, like all the other dude and dudettes who work there. But he's just a naturally kind person. And the one thing that you have heard on this radio program, and you've read in the blog, is to hire happy people, because they will be happy no matter what, or where, or how they're doing their deal. They're just happy people, period. And Costco has a few gems in Melis and Richard. So thank you. And we do have a corporate response from Costco. I'll post it on the blog. We won't even get into that, and really not much of a response, but we'll get to that. We'll also get to Andrew Clark. He is the brand chef. He is a social media maven, and he's going to join me in a conversation coming up right here as you listen to the Unsecret Shopper radio show on 1350 KRNT. Good morning. Go outside, do a little walking around. It's a very beautiful day as the Brady Bunch is out performing for the Rag Briars. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm not kidding about the Unsecret Shopper radio show, which is what you're tuned into on 1350 KRNT at 821 with Johnny. It's all about happiness, baby. Hire happy, train skills is the mantra of the Unsecret Shopper and the Biosphere training program. Coming up on the radio program, I want to talk to you about how happiness plays into the job interview process with 10 questions that you should know the answers to and have answers ready if you're going on a job interview. They're the Johnny questions. And in fact, I had a great opportunity to interview some great candidates for a client that I'm doing recruiting for. Well, the process of advertising, it is an interesting world. How do companies do the thing that they do, and how do they do it across many, many levels of media. And there's so many, you know, it used to be, it was the town crier. And I don't mean the guy who just curled up in the corner and wept as the British came in. I'm talking about the guy who got on the horse and went around yelling, hey, you know, hey, it's 2-for-1 paper towels at ye fairway. And people would say, oh, ye happy now. Ye take wallet and, you know, go buy ye paper towels. And they did. And then the town crier, that was advertising. I mean, that was a Twitter. That was it. That, you know, how did we ever get from that to this? Media, television, the traditional forms of media that businesses use and that all of us follow and listen to, although few of us are, television, radio, print, mailers, billboards, all of those things, the internet, now with banner ads and Facebook, Twitter, blogging, texting, all of these messages being bombarded by all of them. How do businesses stand out? My company, The Biosphere, is dedicated to helping businesses live up to the promise of their marketing. How do business owners create messages that create the promise? Well, one of the best in the biz at doing just that is Andrew Clark. He is the interactive director for Love Scott. He is author, creator, writer for, and inventor of The Brand Chef, which you can check out at thebrandchef.com. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Johnny. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm fantastic. Andrew, you are a man of who is a communicator. I mean, you've got your fingers in a lot of things. You do a lot of things. It's external. It's you're taking what's inside and you're making it external for other people. You do that, and you do
nice.
It, and you do it for yourself as well. Were you like that as a kid?
I was a listener. You know, I was one of the middle children, so I was constantly the mediator. I'd constantly bring my older brother, my younger sisters into the conversations and try to mediate everything. So I was constantly trying to find that message that one party could communicate to the other. Yeah, so it's kind of one of those things I started out pretty early doing.
So was it a matter of you would hear positions from different sides, and somewhere in your genetic code and as part of your upbringing as well and everything that goes into making us who we are, you found a way that you could take those two messages and sort of unite them and bounce them back into things that those people would get and think they were speaking the same language.
Almost an interpreter, exactly.
Oh, very nice.
You know, I'm from a very creative family. My background is in art. My grandparents taught art. My father was an amazing artist. It's just one of those things that everything ended up being visual, and so I could... And I can picture conversations and how things are supposed to be communicated from one person to the other. It wasn't always necessarily between siblings. It's just I got it. And even in teachers, from student to student, I ended up being a student peer in high school, and in college ended up being lab tech for my photography teachers. And everything just ended up being very easily communicated through me and through the things I was trying to do for them.
What is the hardest way, in your experience, to communicate?
Marketing.
Sure, I throw you a softball, you hit it out of the park. Sure.
And you know why? Because nobody trusts marketing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s even, people were pretty pliable. They understood that the product that they were being shown, the commercials on TV, were supposed to be honest. They were supposed to be credible. And society's gotten so skeptical and so resistant to marketing that from a marketing standpoint, your job centers on it, my job centers on it. It's really hard to communicate through marketing.
Is part of it, too, some of the success, the spoils of great marketing have also made us less open? It's kind of like been there, done that, have action figures, so we tend to be more closed off now to listening?
It could be. It's one of those that we get how many marketing messages a day, millions upon millions, and now with the internet and social media. I mean, I could sit there with my tweet deck and Twitter open all day long and do nothing but listen to people talk about their products. And so you become kind of numb to it. And the strategy anymore is to actually just get people to listen. There you've beat the battle almost 90%. Now it's just a matter of getting their interest and engaging them.
My guest is Andrew Clark. He is the interactive director for Love Scott Agency. He is also the founder, creator, developer, writer, wild genius implementer of the brand chef, and I think that's just brilliant. Andrew, how did you come up with that?
Brand chef. It was kind of a brainchild of my stepfather, who forever and ever owned and ran and managed restaurants. So I kind of grew up in the restaurant industry, and it was a choice between going into the art world, advertising, marketing, or being a restaurateur like my stepdad. And as things progressed, one thing led to another, and I became somewhat well-versed in taking people's communications and I hate this, but, quote, spicing them up, end quote. And so the brand chef would take people's marketing, take people's messages, take their product, take their brand, and make it palpable for the masses. And that's really kind of where the brand chef started. And about, like I said, about 4 or 5 years ago, I started blogging just for fun. It's more cathartic than anything else. And it's kind of blown up into something a little bit bigger than me anymore. So it's kind of fun.
So people come on and they read the Brand Chef blog and they say, here's a guy who clearly gets it. In fact, he gets it through multiple levels of media. He gets it just as a human being. This is a guy I like, and you and I know as marketing people, you got to like the guy. I mean, that's or girl, and all other things may open up. What do they come to you with? What sorts of inquiries do you get from people, business owners, et cetera?
Well, you know, a lot of them is a misconception of brand. It's my logo is level one. It's a black and white logo on a black and white card. And, you know, the misconception of brand, like your misconception, you know, what you deal with, the customer service, isn't just what's seen on the surface. It's what's down to the core, three levels of it. It's actually four levels of it, what I call true branding. And that's an acronym. It's truth, relevance, uniqueness, and engagement. Kind of like your five pillars of great customer service: smile, greet, engage, thank, and follow up. It's the things that add up to a good brand. A lot of the people come to me and say, we're not getting one of those. We're not getting uniqueness. We're blending into the background. Or we're not getting engagement from our audience. And it's one of those, well, are you targeting the right people? You know, let's do a little research. Let's do a little brand discernment process and figure out, are you working through the true brand, or are you aiming at the wrong target?
Do you find it hard with business owners or people who have a concept of a business to take them deep? Because I suspect that you sometimes often want to go deeper into it, and they want to say, listen, I'm just selling lemonade. Hello. And you want to go down, and do they always want to go with you willingly?
No. It's one of the things that I tell them up front. This discernment process is not easy. You know, there's going to be some pain points. I'm going to bring up some things that you probably are going to be uncomfortable with me saying. You're not engaged with your audience. You are stuck in 1995. Your product needs repackaging, and it's going to cost you another $50,000 to put it back out on the market. Things that business owners don't want to hear. But probably no, deep down inside, needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of, can you go that route with me? Can you handle the ride with me? A lot of people will take me to a certain point and go, yeah, you've crossed the line. Thanks, we'll talk to you later. Other customers have gone all the way with me, and now they're just loving life. It's making it easier if the decisions are made based on that little acronym, true branding.
What's the hardest conversation to have with a business owner? This isn't a rocket science question. I suppose it's fairly obvious. But are there those clients or business concepts or crowded category ideas where ultimately you ever have to say to a business owner, you know what, I just don't think you can go where you want to go with where you want to go with this thing?
Yeah. I haven't run across that many times. I try to do a little research before I sit down with the client, figure out where they're at in the marketplace. If they're a startup, I try to figure out where they need to go. I mean, that's a great one. I love startups. But it's one of those, if you've been in the marketplace long enough and you're losing market share, then the market has either left you behind or you've gone down a trail that started years ago. And that really, it does get painful. And I don't try to offend people. I'm not going to push my ideas on people. because my ideas are just my ideas. I can shoot in the dark all day long. As long as we get the research to support it and they follow me, then it's painful, but we get through it.
My guess.
I can't say I haven't lost clients from it.
Sure. Oh. Oh, yeah, I'm sure that, yeah, those moments, those stomponado moments where they say, listen, you know, now it's poisonal and I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm paying you how much? Tell me I'm wrong all week? Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes that does occasionally wear thin with clients, doesn't it?
It doesn't make them happy.
No, my guest this morning is Andrew Clark. He is the interactive director for Love Scott. He is also the brand chef. And let's role play, Andrew. Let's say I'm Johnny, and I've I want to start a business. It's Johnny's Computers. I'm a computer whiz, and I think I got it down. I'm a real left brainer, but I think that the masses out there really can benefit from what I can do with a computer from a repair aspect. I'm going to come to you with that. I don't have a shingle out yet, but I have an idea, and I think it's going to be pretty cool. What are you going to tell me?
Well, first of all, who are you serving to? It's who you want to talk to. Is your market Central Iowa? Is it Iowa? Is it Midwest? Is it Macintosh, PC, both? Let's figure out your target audience. Then we need to figure out who your competitors are. Are there 20 of you in the industry in your market? Are there 5 of you? Is there one at all? You may be the only left-handed PC repairman that specializes in Microsoft Office in West Des Moines and Clyde. And there you go. There's your marketing slant. But what we need to do is figure out what makes you different, what your core audience is going to be. And then my next major suggestion is to get a collection, do a focus group of that core audience and figure out what they're looking for. If they're not looking for your product, we need to talk.
Well, let's stop there a minute, because that's so fascinating. And you bring up such a great point, too, because people with ideas that they think are great will bounce them off people who have a vested interest in keeping that person happy, and so will be disinclined to say, listen, that's ridiculous, shut up. And so the focus group idea, I just love it. It's so strong and powerful. But how do you or can you guide those people and say, you need to really go talk to some people who have no vested interest in your joy? They're just going to give it to you straight.
Well, it's a matter of saying, I've got a vested interest in your business being successful. I don't want to be your yes man, but then again, I'm not going to lead you down a road that you're going to fail and blame me for at the same time. So let's get a third party. I don't do the research. I hire a third party company to do that for me. They do it thoroughly. They do it objectively. And then we look at the data and go from there.
How much of that initial or those initial meetings that you have with business concept people or people who have started their own business, how much of your buy-in is their commitment to going down this road with you? Do you get a sense of that early on in the process?
Yeah. If they're not committed, I know it's not going to work. I've got a couple of people that, you know, because I do so much interactive work, people come to me with the next huge social media toy of the world. And if they look me in the eye and have that spark and that interest, then say, okay, let's walk down this road and figure out who's going to be interested. If they're looking at me going, their primary purpose is the bottom line and it's not really going to serve anything but themselves, I usually back up a step or three.
You really then prefaced my next question, and that is, what is For Johnny's Computers or anybody else, what would you say is the now thing in interactive media? This is something, you know what, you need to be in this place. What would it be?
There's a lot leaning on mobile marketing right now. Mobile communication, anything that you can develop for the iPhone or the Android, you know, operating systems. Web is going to be web. There's always going to be desktops, but from the onset of the iPad and the iPhone and all the Android systems, everything's going to go mobile. I also see a resurgence, not in print publication like, you know, newspapers and so forth, but print style broadcast to these devices. There's going to be a resurgence for Newsweek, for the the old print standards that we were used to buying off the newsstand, we're now going to get through our Kindles, we're going to get through our iPads, all that fun stuff. So the adage that print is dead, maybe in the literal term, but I think the magazine industry is coming back.
Well, that really then prefaces even really the next question, too. Is there a media, that you say when someone brings you an idea or something or a business, where you say, you know, that media is may not be dead, but it's kind of like Weekend at Bernie's. Actually, it may be. It just doesn't know it is. Is there a media where you say, you know what, just don't go there. There's no reason to.
You know what, and this is going to really irritate my photographer friends, but photo processing and developing and imaging can be done so easily now that that whole side of the industry is gone. They're still offering that service, but I was a photography major in college, and the half the stuff that I trained to do for 4.5 years can all be done online with a click and couple of this and that.
Right.
You can change your finish, you can change your exposure, have them color correct. So all that whole industry is just kind of the walking dead right now. And it scares me because I've got a lot of friends in that industry. But even photographers, because of digital photography, unless you've got a creative and artistic eye, your technical knowledge isn't going to do you much good here in the very near future.
What does and I haven't even touched on your stuff at Love Scout, and that could be an entire segment too, but tell me what's an average... Okay, there isn't one. Day in the life of the interactive director for Love Scott like?
Oh, because Love Scott is small, we're not, typical 20 to 100 plus person agency. We've got 5 people. So when clients come in or customers come in looking for interactive development, they talk to me. They talk to me as the strategist. They talk to me as the designer, the programmer, and the guy that executes and troubleshoots. So my day, basically starts out, I go in, test all my, research all my analytics. I make sure sites are up and running well. I check all my social media accounts. We do a lot of third-party social media counseling and development for a lot of clients, some nonprofits, some for-profit. So I make sure that information is flowing well. Then I do a lot of strategy. I try to, develop plans and ideas for the clients that need the help, especially online. But because we're such a small group, I can sit there and talk about print. I can talk about media buying. I can talk about the video shoot that's coming up for such and such an auto dealership, blah, blah, blah. So it varies quite a bit. But my routine day-to-day is all online.
And it's so fascinating to listen to you talk, because what I hear, and you tell me if this sounds right or wrong, is that I hear this wonderfully developed, obvious, left-brain, analytical, process-driven, A to Z, how do we get there thing. And then there's this wonderful passion that you so clearly have, which, I know this is too simple, I'm describing left and right spheres here, and there's more to it than obviously what I'm saying, but there's this creative part of you, and there's this joyous part of you, and it's almost like you're that middle kid again, trying to make the left and right have a similar language that they both understand.
Well, and that, thank you for pointing that out. I mean, that to me is a compliment. It's one of those things that the people that I work with, my coworkers, don't get, that I can sit and talk programming and development with programmers who are all left brain and don't get the creative side, and then I can turn around, pull that hat off, put on my creative hat, and do creative sessions, development, directing videos, and illustration and photography. And so, yeah, it's not... It's almost like I'm bipolar in a good way.
sure.
Where I can balance those two. So sometimes I get a little stressed out when I'm in the creative mindset and I need to be coding, but that's something I deal with, with good medication. Yeah.
Well, you never want to you never want to measure any of us up too much, because then we start shutting off those parts, right? Those portals that bring all those great ideas in. Well, people that are listening this morning are listening to this wonderful stew that you're putting together, that you put together for clients, Andrew, and they're saying,
yeah,
you know what? I've got a business. I've got a friend who has a business. I have a concept for a business, and I want to get off on the right foot on every level of marketing that is possible, and I want to get a hold of this Andrew. He is one cool dude. I got to get to know him. What's the best way to get to know and to connect with Andrew?
you know, the best way to connect with me is to go to thebrandchef.com. That's my blog. You can read about what I do, read about all the social media stuff, and right up in the right-hand corner is all the connections for my social media, email, contact, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. So there's always a way to get a hold of me there. Or another really simple way is email me at thebrandchef@gmail.com.
Well, to steal a line from Star Trek II, can he cook or can he cook? He is Andrew Clark, the brand chef. And it has been my absolute pleasure and our listeners' pleasure to speak with you this morning. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, John, it's been a brilliant honor.
Andrew Clark, the brand chef, joining us this morning on the Unsecret Shopper radio show. And you can go to thebrandchef.com, learn more about what Andrew does and how he does it. And his blog is just fantastic. Very interesting post. In fact, he just had one yesterday that you would thoroughly enjoy, as well as many others. 8:42 now at the Unsecret Shopper radio show. Well, listen, if you're searching for a job and that's a full-time gig for you right now, I've got 10 questions that you absolutely must have the answers to be able to ace your next job interview. I'm going to share those with you coming up next, plus a little feedback from Costco Corporate recently received right here at the Unsecret Shopper radio show at 1350 KRNT.
How much is that monkey? How much?
Certainly not a question you, you know, probably have to ask a lot at most retail outlets here in the central Iowa area. Maybe in other countries I can't speak. 8:46 now at the Unsecret Shopper radio show. Last night I was laying in bed trying to fall asleep, and I kept hearing one of the songs that I play here on the Unsecret Shopper radio show rolling through my head, and I couldn't get it out of my head. Now it's gone, replaced by this. Okay, that'll stay with me all week. Coming up at the end of the show, I'll give you a corporate response from Costco, we just recently received about their review. You can read it at theunsecretshopper.com. You can also email me at Johnny, that's J-O-N-N-I-E, at theunsecretshopper.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Hit me there as well. Also, if you're a secret shopper or you'd always like to secret shop, we're hiring like crazy as the Unsecret Shopper grows, as well as the Biosphere, B-U-Y-O-S-P-H-E-R-E. And one of the roles of the Biosphere, my company, is to do recruitment for my clients. Recruitment, that is, helping my clients recruit employees for openings at their respective companies. And in fact, I just went through that process. Well, I'm still going through it. Last week culminated in a series of interviews, 20 of them, all in the same day. Boomity, 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 boom. Yeah, it's kind of a long day, but it was a very interesting day, an informative day. And I want to share some stuff with you. I want to share the questions that I ask interviewees. Now, many of these questions you probably have never heard actually in a job interview, but these should be asked on every interview, in my view. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to give you the justification for these questions. Unemployment, first of all, let's set the table here around 10%. Still high, still tough. There's fewer job openings. There's a lot more applicants. If you pop an opening, if you go on Craigslist or DesMoinesHelpWanted.com or whatever, and you have an opening in your company and you're going to post it, chances are you're going to get bombarded with resumes, cover letters, the whole dealio dough. There's a lot of people out of work, and they're looking central Iowa, all over the country. We talked last week about how to make your resume and cover letter stand out more. And in fact, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be joined by someone from Principal Financial Group from their HR department to talk about their recruitment process, what they look for, how they handle constant openings they have in their particular company. But for our devices for the remainder of this morning, I want to talk about the top 10 questions I think every job applicant should know the answer to or have an answer formulated for. And I think that all openings should have these questions connected to them when you're doing an interview. And I'll tell you why. For example, what would you expect this position to pay? You ever been asked that on a job interview? You probably have, maybe in a different way. What do you think you should earn or whatever? From last week, here are some answers that were given by applicants that probably weren't optimum. I hadn't thought about it. I don't know. I couldn't say. All right. Those are authentic, I think, responses. But here's an old saying. A person who doesn't know their worth has no value. Yes, so when that question is asked, you have to have a response. You have to be able to say something. Start somewhere. This isn't about whoever blinks first loses. It's not. This question is legitimate. It gets asked in interviews all the time. What do you expect the position to pay? And if they're not asking it, you should be asking it as an applicant. Don't go out of that interview without knowing. Don't try to be polite. Hear that all the time, you crazy Midwesterners. You know, I just didn't want to be rude and bring it up. That's the whole reason you're there, is the money. I mean, Siri, come on now. If it was a volunteer position, sure, you wouldn't ask that. So you got to find that out. You got to ask it. You got to give it. You can't leave the interview without knowing that, in my view. Second question. What was your favorite childhood thing? And I tell applicants, what I mean by that is, what was your favorite childhood object? Was it a Barbie doll, a hockey puck, blankie, pillow, a diary, dollhouse, dog, cat? What was your favorite object as a kid? And applicants will think, and some will react very quickly to that, and yeah, I know what it is. Or they'll say, Barbie doll, you know, or a baseball mitt. All right, they're sort of throwing things out. That's fine. So now we know what the thing is. Hopefully you've got something, an answer there. And then the second question is this. Let's say it's a blankie. That was your favorite childhood object. I'm going to say to you then, all right, here's the deal. I'm in the market for blankies. I am in the market, and there are hundreds of blankies being sold on the market. I'm looking for one, and you're selling yours. Sell it to me. So what is the object of this question? Well, it's very simple for me, and that is that the thing that we value most, or thing that we have valued most, particularly from childhood, that we have an emotional attachment to, we should be able to sell that thing pretty easily in its description, in describing it. Not only the features the thing has, but the passion in which we owned it and loved it, and it loved us, whether it's a dog, blanket, whatever it is. And if people can't sell that thing that they value on that level, the odds of them being able to sell anything have been reduced. Why is selling important? Because every retail position, I don't care what you're doing, whether you're just checking people in or whatever you think, it's all about selling. This is all selling. We all have a position we're selling, whether it's in a personal relationship, professional relationship. We are all salespeople. And that idea for many of us is coated in mud. And that mud is like really old mud, not recent mud. And that's how we look at it. But the truth, you know, one of the definitions of sell is to help. There are 27 of them. That's one of them. So the idea that selling is somehow we're abhorrent or we find it disgusting is ridiculous. We sell every day, every single day. And so if you can't sell the thing you love the most, you can't sell nothing, in my view. Some people will say, I wouldn't sell it. Great position. The problem with that position in a job interview is that your I is overriding my R. What is I versus R? We've talked about it on this show. R is your role in life. It is who you are to everyone else, who we are to everyone. It is your title, grandfather, son, daughter, husband, wife, employee, Cub Scout leader. It's who you are to the rest of the world. It's the most giving, selfless part of you. That's your R, your role, your I, your individuality, who you are when no one else is around, the most selfish part of us. All about me, 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 me. In a retail setting, in a job setting, we are all in a role. We all have a role. We have titles, we have responsibilities, but we are giving those roles and those things we do to other people. It's about others that we are serving. It's why we get compensated in the way we get compensated, by serving others. All right. Someone goes into a job interview process and they say, you know what, I wouldn't sell it to you. They're in their eye at that point. They're not playing the game. It's a valid answer. I understand the passion. I'm going to sell you my blankie. But now they're in their eye. And that tells me, as an interviewer, maybe there's other times they're going to stay in their eye and not play the game, because it's all a game. I mean, all of it is a game. Everything we do is part of the game. If you're not having fun with it, you don't plug in, you may be losing some points there. And so just that's a question I think that should be asked all the time in any job interview, and not just because I thought of it. Other questions, what do you like best about yourself? And an applicant will often say, oh, I like the fact that I help people, and I like the fact that I am outgoing, and I like the fact that, and those are valid answers, great answers. But then I always say, well, let me ask you this. Let's assume, what quality do you have where you don't care what other people think about it? This is all about you. And then so I'm asking the I question. What do you like about you? And you don't give a rat's patoot what anybody else thinks about this quality in you. What do you value most about yourself, really, is the question. And you get some fantastic answers. I will ask people, how do you feel right now? How do you feel right in this moment? A lot of respondents say, well, I'm nervous, but I'm confident. Very authentic responses. You know the response I'm looking for? You'll never guess. Happy. Happy. I'm happy. Because why? Happy rules the roost. Hire happy, train skills. There's not a skill set for anybody I'm working with that cannot be trained. But happy, I got no shot at teaching you. You either gots it or you does not gots it. Or if you gots it and you don't know you gots it, you haven't found it yet. That's cool because we're all different parts of growth and we're all ripening at different levels and we've got our journeys and that's cool beans. But a workplace environment is not a place for someone who's not evolved. Those people will bring down a company and you with it as their coworker. And that happens all the time. It's happening right now in your workplace with someone. And we're going to do a whole piece on, we're going to do a whole show on losing weight for businesses. I've lost about 65 pounds and I'm going to write a blog about all this. And businesses need to lose weight in the form of at least one employee on their staff who is holding everyone back. And that's a couple weeks from now. Another question I'll ask, what's my name? And a lot of people, and I was thrilled with most of the respondents knew it and had remembered it. In fact, I was very impressed with that. There were a couple, three, who said, sort of that unfortunate, you know, they know in that moment that they've sort of dropped the ball. And yeah, you know, that's probably going to filter them out. Get your interviewer's name and use it throughout the conversation. And only one person during those interviews actually used my name during that conversation. And you know, with the biosphere, and if you listen to this program, names are important. They're part of the five pillars of great customer service, which are smile, greet, engage, thank, and follow up. Part of the engagement pillar is getting someone's name and using it throughout the conversation. It's a big dealio. So when they didn't know my name, sort of, and then I would tell them, and then, of course, they would use my name after that point in the conversation, which is really cool to try to make up for lost ground. I'll ask people to describe their happiest moment, and they'll describe that. Oh, by the way, one thing I neglected to mention on what I think is one of the most important questions, and that is the childhood object. Tell me what that was and then sell it. One applicant absolutely hit it out of the park. Tell me if this feels about right. If say you go to buy a car and someone's showing you that car and they're going to show you the features of the car, right? They're going to show you the thing and the hatchback and the dealio-do and all that goop. And that's cool. The pivotal moment in that experience, that retail experience, is to get you in the car, get you to start it, and get you to test drive it. Or if it's a blanket you're buying, get you to feel it, engage it, kinesthetics, the five senses, live it, be it, put clothes on at clothing stores. We don't watch them on the racks. We wear them and see how we look in them, right? That's what sells us on the clothes, ultimately, because we're going to be wearing them. One applicant, when selling their item to me in a conversation, said, here, try it out. That was the answer. You got to let them, it's the sizzle with the steak. Samplers, we talked about Costco samplers. Yeah, you get them to taste it, you lure them in, and that's how you get them to buy it. That's brilliant. That's the answer. They get you onto the finals of so you think you can work. A couple other responses. I tell you, the last question, we're out of time here. Tell me about someone you don't like and why. I know. Listen, I know what you're thinking. You never want to interview with me. But what's the answer to that question? I like everybody. There isn't anybody I don't like. That's the answer. It's a lie. It's a load of crap. But that's the answer. Stay in your R and give them that answer. And I had some answers that people were listing me lists of people that they don't like. That's the wrong way to answer. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the great weather we're going to have. Lots of sunshine. And catch the UnsecretShopper.com. See you.